Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. Welcome to Democratic Perspective. We've got a great guest today. Who's sitting across me? Oh, it's Mike Colsantino. Say hello, Mike.
Good morning. Good morning. Mike's here. Yeah, relax. World is safe. So yes, we do have a great guest. We have Chris Kazian, Sedona Fire Chief.
Yeah.
We were just chatting about my illustrious career on both fire departments. Cottonwood and Sedona, 10,000 years ago.
10,000 years ago.
But
this is before Chris was probably born.
Well, the reason we talked about it before we're on the air, so we don't have to talk about it now. So,
Chris starts out, and you start out in the Midwest, and you start out as a on-call paid firefighter. And you begin taking a whole bunch of courses. You get an associate's degree and a bachelor's and then a master's degree in firefighting, and you have all these trainings. And so from the very beginning, it seems to me, when I read his bio, Mike, I see a guy who's spending his life learning stuff and trying to get better at what he does.
Absolutely. I think life is I'm a lifelong learner, and I strive to always be taking new classes and learning new things. But I did start in the Midwest back in the 1990 and as a paid on-call firefighter, and was hired, went to EMT and paramedic school and firefighter training, and was hired full-time in 1991 at Countryside Fire District in Vernon Hills, Illinois. And I worked there the next 22 years, and lo and behold, 2012, I saw a job in Sedona, and I applied and was selected.
Here so you've been in since two. That's a long time.
And I think generally people think that Chris has been an absolutely wonderful fire chief, brought a lot of organization, a lot of skills to the fire department. So I have to ask you, Chris, because it's been in the paper and you've announced that you are applying for another job and being considered for a job in Colorado, and people in Sedona are sort of upset to see you go, you know. So what's the story on this?
Well, so thanks. I love Sedona. This is my dream job. This is where I really, I think, is the most amazing place, obviously, for the beauty and all that it surrounds it, but the community's engaged, and there's lots of great stuff happening here. Some of those things that are great about the community also are the engagement in some levels. Some folks that were expressed their disconcern with me. So, well, you talked about many people, and I was at Oktoberfest this weekend, and many, many people had the same sentiments. We don't want to see you go. You can't leave.
You have tremendous support in Sedona. So if it's a small group of people trying to drive you out, I mean, we've seen this pattern before, and I speak for, I think, a lot of people in Sedona. We really don't want you to be forced out of this as fire chief, because basically the general consensus is you've done a great job, and yet there are people who, I don't know, they want to turn the fire department back, into a volunteer unit, or they want to reduce it, or they're interested in nitpicking the budget. I don't know what's with them.
Yeah, you know, as an outsider, turning it into a volunteer does not make any sense. I just don't understand that. Maybe some guys that could jump on their private helicopter and go to Mayo, no problem. But I think for the rest of us, having paid professional firefighters, and one of the big differences between my day and now is they do everything. You know, there was much more, and I understand there's certainly a lot of people that are just firefighters and just EMTs or just paramedics, but this guy does it all, and he's not alone. There are people that have this incredible amount of training. As I recall, when we did talk a little before the air that, we went on the air that this is the culture I remember was a fitness culture in the fire department, and certainly a learning culture. He just said lifelong, you're going to be a fireman if you're going to be in a first responder. That's part of the deal. You're going to be a lifelong learner, and that's training and fitness is what it was all about. So what is a fire department? I want you to, that's the basic question we're getting. Go ahead.
Well, let me just, lifelong learner, that's the part of what you said, Steve. So I'm certainly committed to being a lifelong learner. And so there's a lesson to be learned in everything. And so while I don't want anyone to think that some vocal minority is pushing me out or creating an opportunity for me to want to leave the organization because there's something to hide or because we're I don't want to be challenged. I love a good challenge. I love the interest in the fire district, but because of the comments and the approach some folks have taken, it created an opportunity for me to look over the fence and see what else is out there. Because to be honest, while I love this community and I think that I work really hard for each and every one of the taxpayers that provides the funding to the fire district, sometimes you got to realize that you just can't treat people like that. And that's what was the impetus for me to at least look over the fence. Personally, I've got my wife and my daughter live in Phoenix, and so we've been living apart for 3.5 years, and that's not an easy task either. So my daughter and her school needs and things like that, we felt that it was a better fit for her to go to school in a different school system. And that's no digs on our school system here at all. It's really a personal matter for my wife and my child and I. And so those pieces fit into the puzzle as well. So I just want to be clear at this point, while I am being considered as a finalist for a position in an organization in Colorado, I love this place. I'm just as committed to here and certainly don't want anyone to feel like I'm quitting on them or that I'm, I just can't stand the heat, so I'm getting out. That's not it at all. I've been here 6.5, almost 7 years, and it's been a wonderful, wonderful organization. It's a wonderful community. We do great things. And we're competition, right? We're fitness minded. We're
absolutely
goal oriented. And so that's just trying to reach those new levels and kind of back to that competition side.
Let's talk a little bit about the tax piece that you came in with a little preparation during your tenure.
So tax wise, I had the luxury of being hired in March of 2012. So we have just come off a recession, 2008, 2009. If you know fire district and we're based on taxes are 18 to 24 months behind schedule. So as the recession is occurring in 8 and 9, we're beginning to see those downturns in what we call assessed value. Our assessed value lost over 43%. So we had an over 800.
Wow.
$1 million assessed value of all of our taxable properties. It went down 43%. And today, our taxable value, after going back up, our assessed value is at $570 million. So you can see if we have one of our numbers that we multiply to get our taxes by, that's significantly lower. The other number we have to multiply by is our mill rate, and so that one has to go up. Back in the 2012 era, 11-12, the board at the time was cutting the mill rate as we were seeing declines in our assessed value. So if you have a smaller number multiplying by a smaller number, you get a smaller number. That's math is still the same. You're a teacher, right?
Yes, sir. I got it.
So the math is simple for you and for most. And so what happened in those days is that they actually, in order to create a balanced budget, they actually used a lot of our capital reserves that were here for capital projects like Station Number 6 that was in the works at the time, things like that. And so they balanced the budget by spending that capital reserve. And so as I got here in 12, we were pretty much at about the lowest. We were our tax levy in 2008-09 was $13.8 million. And when I arrived, it was $8 million. So there was $5 million essentially less taxes being collected in just a couple of years. Great.
Explain for a minute that because we did this when we interviewed a couple of candidates for the board. Explain the size of, so some folks don't know the size of the fire district as opposed to the size of the city of Sedona or village of Oak Creek or something.
So
how large is it?
So the Sedona Fire District is 168 square miles. We cover from essentially Page Springs Road all the way above, about a mile and a half above the overlook up at the top of the canyon. So about almost 27 miles of 89A. And then we cover from the Y all the way to 17, which is about 14 miles on 179 there. And then everything else in between. So Lower Loop Road, all the Boynton Canyon area, everything in the canyon we cover. And so it's a very expansive. So our fire district, it says 168 square miles. Our EMS district, our paramedic medical district, is 274 square miles. So it's a very large footprint with very limited infrastructure that allows us to get from point A to point B. And so that's one of our biggest challenges that we face, is how do we manage the response and the ability to cover that big of a footprint. And we do it through five strategically located stations right here, one in West Sedona, one in Uptown, one in the Canyon, one in the Chapel area, and one in the Village. And essentially we cover the bulk of where our responses are with those five stations fairly well.
Is that enough stations?
At this time, I believe that's enough stations. I think as we talk about potential growth towards the lower loop area and some of the area down by our station number 8, which is our telecom station works out of there. That area, if they build 800 homes down there, that they're talking about 700 homes. Maybe that will change our need, but right now our five stations are well placed. Our station 5 in the canyon, we want to move that north to Slide Rock. That will serve the whole district a little bit better than where it's currently located. But other than that, the other ones are, they're fire stations. You can't just pick them up and move them very easily.
No.
So, as the towns develop, maybe one could be inched over a couple of blocks or be in a better spot, but it's essentially
I saw a statistic the other day. The city of Philadelphia is 143 square miles, and you're saying the district is 168 square miles. And, then there's 6 million people in Philadelphia. It's a huge district to be responsible for, and everything that's traveling through it, and every emergency, first responder thing that happens in that 160 miles or the 212 miles is your responsibility. So it takes a highly trained and fit crew to cover it.
I know that you guys are. Let me ask you this, because are your firefighters? Are you guys getting enough training? Are you getting the training that you want and need to
Yes.
be able to? Are you up on all the latest things? For example, most of your calls are EMS calls. When I look at it, thousands of them. You do thousands of them a year.
We have the statistics right here.
3,000 a year.
There you go.
So are you happy with where you're at with your equipment? Is your equipment up to date? See, Mike and my concern is not whether everything is managed exactly perfectly. Our concern is that we have a absolutely first-rate fire department that can save people, etc., stop fires, do its job in a top-notch kind of way. I mean, that's, I think, the focus that Mike and I agree on. We want, a first-rate fire department. If I call EMS and have a heart attack, I want you guys there as quick as possible. I don't want to say, well, we're going to be volunteers, we'll come into the, I don't want that at all, personally. I think that's dangerous to the people in Sedona.
As soon as I finish with this customer, I'll be there.
Right. Yeah, we want you there. And, the population is average age is 55. So we have a ton of people in their 70s and 80s. And we need a fire department that can protect us. I mean, that's what, frankly, as a citizen sort of see your guys' job is, if we have a problem, we have a fire in the house or something, you guys come in and save our butts. That's pretty simple in some ways.
Yes. So a couple questions there. We are well trained. We have the what we call the low frequency high risk events, right? So we need to train more on those because the risk is so high and we don't do them as frequently. So we don't train every day on how to start an IV because we start a whole bunch of them each and every day. Yet we also work very hard to understand every time we have a cardiac arrest, we look at all the data. Our new cardiac monitors and such can actually tell us how effective our CPR was, and our crews are actually digging into each and every one of those calls. And we have one of our paramedics that's looks at each one of those calls and reports back to the crew, hey, here's what we saw, here's what you did, what happened here? Oh, that's when we took them down the stairs and we had to stop CPR. Well, we looked at that, and we've now bought what's called an auto pulse, which is a device that will do the CPR compressions mechanically and scientifically done to provide better CPR than even a human can do. And so we have these periods where we were not able to do CPR. Now we're able to continue to do CPR, which is going to provide the best benefit for you.
I think, folks, we went to training every 2 years by the fire department or by one of the firefighters, sometimes down in Cottonwood, very great fire department down there, too. People don't realize how quickly you can get in trouble if you stop breathing. It's like 4 or 5 minutes. Yeah, you need to have somebody get there. And if you're there, folks, you need to start, CPR right away if you know how to do it. And it's good for people to be trained in it. And,
absolutely.
And because there is not much time. And we need these guys to get there with the best equipment and skills they've got. I mean, people's lives are at stake in these situations. And
so you said earlier, right? If you said, if I call 911, I want the right people to show up. I mean, I say when you're having your worst day, you want the A team there, right? You don't want the B team.
We don't want C team. We don't want wonderful volunteers who come in from their houses or something. No. So it doesn't sound good.
So the volunteer system works in many ways across the country, and in many ways in rural communities and different places, or even in more populated areas, they'll have a volunteer system on the East Coast. And well, I'm not knocking that system because it works in its places, but here in Sedona and where we are today, the sophistication of the equipment and the training and the expectation of our community is such that to revert back to something like that would notice a difference completely. And also I think about, just as if I was a business owner, if I was a customer, right? If in the old days when the bell rang and, the guy working the produce counter, dropped
That's
the
right.
fruit and went away and did something, or the cashier just, went away. Could you imagine being served at, one of these nice fancy restaurants we have here in town, and you're about to place a nice order for, an appetizer and a glass of wine, and the guy says, "Oh, I'm sorry, I got to leave right now." In today's world, we've got this Yelp thing, right? You get a Yelp review going, "I was about to order. I was about to order my food, and the guy left me." Then people read that, and next thing you know, your business isn't doing well because you're helping serving the community and doing wonderful things.
One of the organizational things, and we might come back to the technical stuff too, but I want to get this in, and that is the relationship between boards and the department and the firefighters and the,
right.
and the
you're the fire chief. What does that mean? You run the fire department essentially, and the board supervises you. You work for the board.
Yep. The board really has one employee, and that's me. They're one of their main functions is to approve the budget and to hire and fire me. Really, the main focus is that the budget does. They set policy for the fire district. The operational aspect is all run under me. So. Making sure that there's a good relationship between the board and the fire chief, that's critical. That doesn't mean that the fire chief gets to run the show and gets everything that he or she wants. That's not what happens at all. As a fire chief who presents, the program that we have here in Sedona, we do that through our strategic plan. So we've identified where we're trying to go and how we're trying to get there, through our budgeting process every year. We're identifying the projects and programs and things that we're looking to present that year. And then throughout the year, we're just kind of executing those things that we've set forth and identified. And some folks, for whatever reason, have felt that there's, no accountability, and the fire chief is running amok. And I can tell you that's not the case. My board holds me very accountable, and they provide insight and questions, sometimes offline, as board members and people like that should do. And that's important. And other times they'll ask in meetings questions. But I certainly, as a fire chief, I've told some folks that if I ever worked in an organization that just said, "Hey, you're the chief, you can do whatever you want, you're in charge, you're the best," and I don't want to work at the place, because that's not accountability that I expect from a board, and nor would I want that kind of power or authority. I there's a checks and balance in this system, this beautiful democracy we have, and we elect 5 board members in the Sedona Fire District case. The public at large elects them, and they're there to represent the people.
Well, that's very true. Almost every chief I've ever talked to, and for an assistant chief for that matter, they want the community direction. They said, this is, as you just said, don't make me do this all on my own. I need and want and desire and look forward to the direction of the community. Where are we going here? And board members are elected to do that. And as you said, policy. And one of the things, certainly we've seen, I've lived here 50 years, so between Cornville and Camp Verde and Cottonwood and Sedona, you've seen people come on and off of boards that do maybe get into a little more micromanaging than they should be, and usually it's out of love for the action, or at least the or support for first responders as much as necessarily trying to tell people what to do. But still, even whatever the cause is, it still can interfere with the smooth operation of a fire department. So when I was talking about the correct relationship or whatever it may be, the ideal board and for a working fire department, do they get some training? Do board members? You guys get? We just talked about lots of training. Do they train the policymakers?
So there is actually a state law that requires all new board members. Actually, even after you're a board member and get reelected, you have to go back to this training. So every 4 years, you would need to go back and retrain. And there's four or five classes they take about open meeting laws, about finance, things like that. They do talk a little bit about that relationship with the fire chief and how important that is.
Board meetings are open, right, Chris? Oh, anybody can show up.
Absolutely.
Folks, if you have any questions about what's going on, you can actually just show up at a board meeting and listen in. Directly.
Yeah, and that's a good point. You don't have to believe the rumors that you've heard or the incorrect things you may be hearing. You can go find out for yourself.
So what's weird, Mike, up here in Sedona is almost everybody thinks the fire department is doing a great job.
Yeah, that's
as a great fire chief, has a good board, and yet we're getting this small minority who's running a campaign. They tried pretty much to destroy the city government of Sedona, and now they want to take over the fire board because they lost the election to city government here. And it's hard to understand what their fury is about because it's so different than, I think, the vast consensus of Sedona. I think the people who think you or the fire chief is out of control is just a tiny minority. I don't think I've never run into anybody except a small group who think that, but yet they can affect things, Chris.
Yeah, certainly, and I think you said earlier, you know, when you dial 911, you want the A-team to show up, right? And so that's where, as a board, you know, we hear that the people want us to respond. We have over almost 4,500 calls a year we respond to, and so it keeps us pretty busy. Not only just covering that square mileage we talked about, but getting to the hospital down in Cottonwood or having to take someone to Phoenix, you know, a hospital for specialties and things like that, that sometimes we need to transport people to, things like that. It takes up a lot of time. And so as a fire chief, you know, if the community said we really don't care about response times and we want a volunteer fire department and we want whatever those things may be that they want, then that would be what we would hear. And we don't hear that. We hear that they love our service, that they're highly trained professional firefighters and paramedics that are treating our people in the community, and they love us. And so that's our focus, and we continue to maintain that. And if there's a different direction that's requested, that would go through the board to say, hey, we want to change directions. But our board has been very focused over the last almost 7 years that I've been here to maintain or enhance our services. We've added Fire Station 6 to our cadre, where there was a definite hole in our response. That was identified in 2007. And so here we were in 2012 and 13. The station opened up in 2014, I believe. And we put that in place. We put that in motion. We're creating really, you know, what the community needs, and it's not out of bounds, and it's certainly not out of control. It's very focused. And, you know, I mentioned earlier the levy, you know, and I said that it was $13.8 million in 2008 and 2009 and went down to $8 million when I got here. So, and they spent most of the savings. So you could only imagine as a fire chief coming into an operation knowing that we've taken about $5 million off the rolls. We've spent most of our savings. Where do you think the fire chief coming in feels like we're going to go? Either if we maintain this, we can't maintain it because the piggy bank doesn't have as much money left, or we're going to have to increase the taxes to get back. And our taxes, our levy today is $14 million. So in 2009, our levy was $13.8, and now we're at $14.0 million. So we're about $200,000 more in tax revenue. 10 years later, we've added a station. We had 69 firefighters providing service to the community. Today, we have 75 on shift. So we've added six firefighters, two per shift. And ultimately, across the board, we're $200,000 more in taxable revenue. And that, to me, was an inevitable place to go. or we had to cut service, and the community didn't want to do that. The board who's elected for those has said,
no, we don't want to cut service. That's not the direction we want to go.
We're talking to Chris Kazian, Sedona Fire Department Chief, Sedona Chief. Like I said, I'm still upset that it's not called the Oak Creek Fire Department. I guess Sedona Fire Department works pretty well. But what is the name of the department?
It's Sedona Fire District.
Thank you. Sedona Fire District. I think one of the people running for the board, that we support, I think it was 1955 where the name actually changed.
57 is when we became, whether Sedona, Oak Creek,
yes,
and the Red Rock Fire District.
Okay.
Back in the 57, 59, somewhere in there, one started, the next one started after that. I forget which is which. And then they combined and were the Sedona Fire Department, in the 90s, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And then, they ended up making it the Sedona Fire District because that's what we actually are as a taxing agency, as a district. So they changed the name to Sedona Fire District.
When we interviewed two of the candidates for the fire board, I think we were very blunt about keeping the service at a high level.
Yes.
And both, Al Camino and, Gene McCarthy were right on schedule. I mean, they have the same values that Mike and I have of keeping a first rate, fire department. I know you can't get in the politics of it, but we were really, want you guys, where you stand on this.
And we can be rougher on the board than we're being on you.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. What Steve is saying.
Yeah, we beat up on a little bit.
Hey,
but
take care of this, would you?
But make sure if you get on that the fire department keeps doing what it's been doing.
We're talking to Chris Casey and Sedona Fire Department Chief, Sedona Fire District Chief. One of the things, and if we got other things, that's fine too. But the Oak Creek Canyon, that's where I lived, at least in part when I lived here, has special fire needs, as
correct,
everybody will. So talk if you don't mind a little bit about the special fire needs and, for that matter, emergency response needs, medical needs of Oak Creek Canyon.
So Oak Creek Canyon obviously is, the original scenic byway of the state of Arizona.
Right,
so
right.
We, certainly if you are Googling where you go check out Arizona, it comes up top of the list, right kind of below that big hole in the ground up there.
That's right.
And so certainly we get a lot of visitors to Oak Creek Canyon. We know that there's one way in and one way out, so that's a challenge for us. Certainly there's access issues as it relates to the low water crossings in many of the areas as you go across Oak Creek that meanders through there. And so the fire response for us is, fires burn the same there. That they do it in the city of Sedona, but the difference is there's some access issues through some of the spots. There's certainly the vegetation is completely different, right, in the canyon as mm-hmm. it relates to wildfires and spreads. We certainly know that we had the slide fire. We've had the Brins fire. And so those two affected Oak Creek Canyon, and were both type 1 incidents, which are the largest type incidents you can get for a wildfire or any type of emergency. And so we had, the slide fire, we had over 1,000 firefighters at that fire in the first 24 hours through the national system that we have. So we pre-plan through the canyon specifically the points of access that are challenging. We know what areas there's not fire hydrants in many. There are a couple spots with fire hydrants in the canyon, but so we know we have a drafting operation and a rural water situation. So we have to plan for that and get all the parts and pieces to get in place to be successful. And our folks are very well versed on what the challenges are in each of our areas, because actually each of our fire districts have their own special unique circumstances, mm-hmm. whether it's both by distance by your backup coming in to back you up, or the type of homes or the type of topography that's created in each and every one of our fire stations.
I see Sedona Fire name on three structures in Oak Creek Canyon. There's one at Indian Gardens, one at Junipine, and I thought there was one at Don Holes, or what's now Butterfly Garden.
So So we do not own the Junipine is no longer ours. That was sold or whatever happened well before my time.
Okay.
But there was a station there that was actually Station 6 back in the day.
I see.
And we say stations, those are essentially a garage.
Exactly.
So some people call them a station. That we call it a station just because it had a number. And in the volunteer days, there was a truck there and people responded. But in today's, you would drive by and it looks like a garage.
Right.
Our station number 7 up by now is Butterfly Garden. in. That is a very small station. So we have a footprint and availability there. I think when you look at the tax rolls, I think it's like 0.03. I was looking at the tax rolls about a year ago, and I couldn't find the I'm like, there's a station. Where do we not own it? I was trying to.
Yeah.
And sure enough, after I zoomed in and zoomed in and zoomed in, I found the actual parcel lit up because it's so small.
Oh, yeah.
And so we do have a station there that we store some things in.
Mm-hmm. All right.
But it's not a full operational station with people stationed there all the time, or it is?
No, not at all. It's literally, you can fit
a truck
there.
You just place the equipment there so you can get out.
We put a truck there and overflow. If we needed to get access to something, we have stuff there. But, you know, the challenge with anything, you know, running an operation, if you were to get some local folks there that could then run and go grab that truck, and
right.
You know, that sounds great and easy, but
right.
In today's world, there's liability. That's a word they use in our business a lot, you
sure.
know, so we can't just go, hey, Steve, here's the keys to the truck, and pull it out and go fight the fire, and you know.
let me ask you about fires. You I'm looking at stats for 2017. You guys were called for 84 fires. What kind of fires are you mostly dealing with? House fires or?
So great question. So on those, the fires could be anything from a car fire to a house fire, you know, an RV fire. I mean, it could be all those are what gets categorized in the structure fire, or fire category. And, I would say we have a handful of fires each year. And so, you know, and most of those you probably won't read about, you know, so if your trash can catches on fire, your toaster starts to burn, you call us, and yeah. There was a fire that might be categorized by technicality as a fire. But the ones where you see the trucks pull up, pull all the hoses and do that, there's three or four of those a year. I always get the question, like, well, then why do we really need you guys, right? If you only have three or four fires a year, gosh, you know, I'm like, well, that's a success, right? I don't want to be the fire chief that says, we used to have, you know, 100 fires when I was a fire chief. You know, you guys only have three or four now. What are you doing wrong? I mean,
but,
that's a success.
But also car fires, Chris, can start grass fires and I mean, you have to respond to car fires.
Oh, absolutely.
Particularly on the highways. And I think all of us who drive around Sedona see burned areas that come from car fires spreading into the – somebody has to keep it from spreading further.
Correct. That's absolutely correct.
So the number of fires – what you have another thing, overpressure, rupture, explosion, and overheat responses. You do a few of those.
Couple of those. So those – you know, so I want to be clear. So we don't make up these categories because they sound interesting. This is a national fire incident reporting system. It's called NFIRS. So the system, everyone in the whole country reports their fire so they can collect the data across the country. And so, if you have an overpressure, like a steam pipe or a boiler, well, we don't probably have a lot of those, but if you had one, there's a category for that. If you had an explosion but no fire, so, you know, maybe there was a dust explosion or something of that nature, excessive heat, scorch burns with no ignition, so I don't know what those eight particularly were, mm-hmm. but somehow they fit into that category, one of these categories. And
so the category below that, which has eight, is rescue and EMS, which has 3,100,
correct.
So that's
the one
what you're doing,
that
right?
That interests most of us, quite frankly. The rescue missions and the emergency medical services for anyone, I don't care if you're 8 years old or 80 years old, is what you think of when you think of fire. I mean, yes, you think of fires too, but not more as much or more you think of emergency medical. And they have 3,100. 3,100 and that keeps people busy.
So out of our, we staff four ambulances a day, one at in the village, one at the chapel, one in Uptown, and one in West Sedona. Our station in the canyon only is allowed to have two people in it, by conditional use permit. And so we operate them on an ALS engine. So all of our four fire engines, four ambulances are, there's an EMT and a paramedic on each of those. And each one of the five engines that we have staffed each day is also advanced life support, meaning there's at least one paramedic on every fire truck. So if a fire truck pulls up, they can essentially do all the same medical treatment interventions that an ambulance can do, with the exception of transport. And so 3,100 times we responded to people having a medical emergency. That could be, you know, a heart attack, could be feeling sick, nauseous, passed out, could be a car accident with injuries. It could be a rescue search for a lost person, an extrication, whether it's from a machine, whether it's from a car that they're trapped in, a high angle rescue, things like that. Those are all the type of calls that fall under the 3,100 calls that we did. And so that keeps us very busy.
Well, that's it. And to have anyone think for a minute, for a second, that you could handle anything like that with anything but a staff of professional firefighters and first responders seems almost silly. I don't know what would make someone think that are you supposed to call less? Are you supposed to have less emergencies? Are you supposed to think twice before saying, gee, maybe this isn't a heart attack, or maybe I don't, you know, I don't know what goes through the mind of someone that says, that looks at these kinds of stats and says, let's see if we can get the school teacher or the produce guy to cover this for us.
What are service calls? You have a category, you do almost 800 service calls. What is service calls? And then my question, Mike, that I want to go to is, yes, there's another category that interests me. You do 245 good intent calls.
Okay.
What the hell is a good intent call?
So service call.
I'm not touching that one.
Service call, person in distress, water problem. So maybe they've got a water leak in their home, smoke or odor problem. So maybe they just got a smell of smoke in their house. A public service assist. So maybe we go help the police department. Maybe we've got an elevator rescue, something like that. So those are what those service calls kind of fall under. And then the good intent calls was your next question, right? So, you know, dispatched and canceled en route. Wrong location, no emergency found. A controlled burn. So someone calls, so they see smoke, and it turns out that I've got a burn going, or it's a burn barrel in my backyard.
So it means that their intent is good, but it's not necessarily something that you really have to do.
Correct. Correct.
So it's not the ladies' club showing, say, please show up in uniform.
Exactly. No.
And dance a little. Okay.
Yeah,
just checking.
No, just
all
checking. Right.
Yeah.
So yeah. So an EMS call where the party's already been transported. So maybe you got a call on the highway, someone feeling sick. By the time you get there, they say, we took them by ourselves to the hospital, or whatever. So those are what good intent calls are. And so
I see.
You know,
and that's better than saying false alarm.
Well, false alarm's a separate category. False alarm and false calls are separate. Again, so this is where the whole national system is trying to differentiate so they can get the difference between a false call. So if you have a false alarm, so that's a malicious or mischievous false alarm. So I pull the fire alarm, or I do something that we have a bomb scare, a system or detector malfunction. So,
sure. Well, you can punish a false alarm, where you're not so likely to punish a good intent.
Yeah, no, I didn't understand that the false alarms are really sort of false calls. They're
correct.
Not like good. There's a difference between, I see the difference now, between good intent calls,
yep,
and false. And you do 170 of the false alarm, false calls last
right.
in 2017. Severe weather, natural disasters, you do just a couple of those.
Yeah, that's a tough one to categorize. Those fall under just a couple different ones. Earthquake assessment, no rescue. Okay, we've had a couple earthquakes since I've been here, right? A couple tremors.
Yep.
Flood assessment. So it's probably where those are coming in flood assessment type calls is what that is. Wind or storm, tornado type damage. I had a tornado yesterday up in the Flagstaff area, I think I saw. A lightning strike with no fire. Or severe weather or natural disaster standby. So a couple of times a year we get some significant weather, and we've had a couple of calls where we've typed that in as our reason for the call.
So are you comfortable with your level of preparedness and support for a large forest fire coming down to the Sedona? Because we've seen what's happened in California, and I know you were really successful in stopping the slide fire. But I think we still we're looking at extremely dry conditions. We had this winter, extremely dry winter, very dry, sort of scary summer. Now we've had a wet fall. The weather's kind of shifting on us. And I know from my days as a tour guide, we love dry winters because we got a lot of tourists coming up here. But they scaled the hell out of us because we were worried about what was going to happen in spring with the fires.
So we are very well prepared. Sedona Fire District has many, many of our members who are engaged at high levels within the wildland fire community and response. So we get exposure. We had firefighters all over California, Washington, Oregon, Idaho. I mean, all over the country. We went to North Carolina last year for some fires down there. We might have hit Florida also last year. So we send folks across the country to be engaged and help support. And then when we have events like the Slide Fire and those 1,000 firefighters I spoke of earlier, they're coming from all those other communities as well. There's no fire service that is capable, short of maybe Cal Fire, and even they're calling us to help support them. So we're working pretty hard to make sure our folks are trained, have the experience, and it's all about the initial decisions a lot of times on how and what we do once a fire starts. Of course, we want to do everything we can to prevent a fire, so getting communities to think about being firewise or getting you to think it's your home to be firewise so that we can help stop the spread of fire is really critical, and we're working hard at that as well. So a two-pronged approach is the education and prevention piece and then the preparedness. And your question was, are we prepared? We're as prepared as you can be, but know that we do not have the resources, nor does anyone else. The Phoenix Fire Department doesn't have the resources, to be able to know that we got enough resources. You just couldn't say that. You'd be foolish.
So it's really coordinated resources from all over as quickly as you can.
Yep, working with our partner agencies, so local and regional and state and federal. It's a tiered system.
Talking to Chris Kazian, Sedona Fire Chief. One of the things before we run out of time, Chris, I know you started a charity.
I did.
Could you talk about that?
Sure. My wife and I, we have four daughters, and my one daughter, Lexi, was born not breathing, and she was diagnosed with cerebral palsy eventually and had some significant challenges in life. She passed away at 2 years and 3 months, and so we found that living in the world of having a child with special needs, it was challenging and difficult to have some of the resources and some of the things that we thought would be beneficial or would have helped us be better parents and such. And so we started a nonprofit after she passed away. And we were able to help families. We still are helping. The charity still exists, a little bit scaled down now that we've moved, but still exists. And just it was a great event last month, and so we help children with special needs make their life, improve their comfort and quality of life. And so we're proud of the work we've done for the last. It was 2005 we started, so 13 years.
Wow, long time.
13 years we've been doing it.
Okay. All right. Well, very good. I just want to know a little more about that. But as you say, is the scaling down a little bit now? So
It's still there. We just haven't had a fundraiser in 4 or 5 years, so it's kind of hard to, keep up the great work you do when you haven't had a fundraiser. We've got a couple grants here and there and things like that. But we're honored to help people and make a difference in their lives and so proud to keep her memory alive. And there's nothing better than hearing somebody say her name and get an email or whatever talking about the great things that we've done to help make their life a little
better. Well, if anybody's interested, they can go through you.
Sure. Check our website. Helpingfromheaven.org is our website, and they can see a little bit about us, or we have a Facebook page and things like that.
There's an election coming up for the fire board, folks, so you need to inform yourselves about it, and it's too late to register if you haven't registered, I believe, but it's not too late to vote.
That's right.
So get ready to vote. Now, if you care about the fire department, look at the different candidates and see what kind of fire department you want. Let's be honest. Let's be straightforward about it.
Yeah.
And with all the other things, it's important that you vote whatever your political party or politics and stuff is.
Yeah, this is a nonpartisan thing. This is the name of the show is Democratic Perspective, but every once in a while we do, and we do a lot of them actually, a nonpartisan show, and this is one of them, out of concern for just the community and what's going on with the fire department, and get updated a little bit on this important function. We want to make sure that you realize that this and all our shows can be found at vbid.org, Verde Valley Independent Democrats. You can find a podcast of this show and all our shows always. Thanks, folks.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.